Good evening. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Welcome to part two of the North Fork Storytellers Home for the Holidays. The Blue Sage Center for the Arts, the Paonia Library, and KVNF team up several times a year to host a storytelling event where locals are invited to share a true story based on a theme. The theme this month is Home for the Holidays, and tonight you'll hear from Tara Miller and Dana Stovern about one of the most important parts of Christmas, the tree. Here's the host of North Fork Storytellers, Brian Calvert, to introduce our first storyteller.
I'm going to introduce Tara Miller. She's a potter and a longtime resident of Paonia and one of my favorite storytellers.
Thank you. Well, when I married Sam 31 years ago, I promised to love him and honor him and do the Christmas tree business with him. His family had been selling Christmas trees in the Southern California for many, many years, or in the LA area in Long Beach. And he had been playing in the sawdust in the tree lot since he was a little boy. And so it was the family business, and it seemed like that was going to be our life. Before that, I had a regular family Christmas. I have two sisters. One of my sisters lived near me over, we were in the Roaring Fork Valley at the time. There are two little kids, so we would have Christmas morning with presents and a tree. And sometimes maybe I would go to Oregon and spend Christmas with my mom or my Grand Junction with my grandmother and uncles and cousins. It was always about being with family. So it made sense to go to California and be with his family. I had met them at the wedding. I hadn't met them other than that, but that was fine. And we had Thanksgiving with their family, extended family, that sort of thing. Nice big dinner and all that. Well, it's the holiday season that was so different. When I lived in Oregon, and especially here, I sang with the choir and went to all the parties. Community gets together on Christmas. And so even after we moved to Paonia, I didn't really know my community as well as I might have, because I was always gone during that one season when we really get together. But so I went, and we would set up the tree lot. We'd leave around the first week in November. The tree lot had about a quarter acre, like 100-foot square, big tree lot, plus a parking area. We would set up these candy striped 10-foot poles to hang lights from. And they had a little nice festive air, almost like ornaments on a tree. We would get the lot all ready. There'd be straw on the ground just to keep it from being muddy. The truck would arrive from Oregon, full of baled Christmas trees from my mother and father-in-law's Christmas tree farm. And we would get a big crew of guys and begin to unload the trees. And that first Douglas fir would come off the truck, and we'd open it up. In fact, just opening the truck, this aroma of the Oregon woods would happen. And the Douglas fir, it was like allspice. Do that someday. Crush a Douglas fir needle. It's spicy. It's fabulous. And that was the best part about it. The worst part of it was that the hours were 8 in the morning till 9 at night, and you hardly could get enough sleep, and it was hard labor. We would get a big crew in, unload the truck, lay the trees out by size and species and variety, and then cover them with a shade cloth so they wouldn't get burned in the Southern California sun. And then we set up on the lot. And right near the gate was our little travel trailer that we could sleep and cook in. And close to us were the tabletops. So we had a low visual. The tabletops were mostly Scotch pine, which are really prickly and much better if they're very short. Also beautiful as small trees and lousy as big trees. And then the Douglas fir from the 5 feet up to about 8 feet. And then the noble fir up tall, and then there'd be a whole other section of what I would call bank trees or country club drive trees, because we were on the busiest street in Long Beach. On one side, there was a big Mexican neighborhood. I got to sell Christmas trees in Spanish. I got very fluent with things like water stands and flocking and all these odds and ends that you wouldn't think would be your most important Spanish vocabulary, but I got very good at that. Then downtown, it was called Bixby Knolls, and there was a street actually called Country Club Drive. And then in between us and the beach was a really big black neighborhood, and here and there was a Samoan and some Philippine, and downtown was a big gay community, and we sold to everybody. We were the mom and pop that tried to match the big department store's prices. So we were cheap, but we were full service, so we could deliver and flock and put water stands on and all that good stuff. I would walk around the tree lot after we got it all set up, carrying an 8-foot pole painted white with little red stripes, just marking the feet so people could know how tall the trees were and also so I could price them. So it was like my staff walking around, and you could find me most of the time from across the lot because that stick would be hanging up there. We had workers that would unload the truck, and then half of them would go, and then they would stay with us. It's hard to find people who can just drop their lives and come and work. Most of our workers were homeless guys. One of my big mistakes I could never learn was we would pay the guys, we've always paid cash at the end of the day. We'd pay them for Friday night, and then they'd go out and get drunk, and they wouldn't show up on Saturday. One day a father came in and said, "I'd really like for you to hire my 14-year-old son. He's really brainy. He's already taking college level classes, and I think he needs to have some physical labor into his life." So we hired Edward, who would come back Christmas vacation for year after year, and he was this brilliant young black man, wonderful person. We had Cliff, who had a vacation one year and came in and was out of work or something, and he turned out to be our best salesman, and he would actually take his vacation in order to work for us. And then we had this one guy who was kind of homeless. His name was Reuben. And Reuben had worked for Sam's folks, and he knew the routine. He was okay with doing the work and all that. But one day I kept finding, we had some big 10-foot Douglas firs from the parents' farm, and they were too tall, they were too big, really heavy, awkward. I was a bit worried about selling them, but they were expensive. You know, they were cheaper than most 10-foot trees would be, but they were, they were for the bank. They were for the big house on Country Club Drive. And they were baled, and they were coupled on display, but they were covered with the shade cloth. And all day, I would come back to those trees, and they would be uncovered. I'd cover them up, and I go, "What's going on?" I finally caught Reuben uncovering them. And I kind of read him the riot act and said, "You got to keep these covered. What's going on? We're not even putting them up." Well, that night, when we came back the next morning, the back gate had big tire, it was open. There were tire trucks from an obviously fairly heavy vehicle, and all of the 10-foot Douglas were gone. And we never hired Reuben again. There's a postscript for that story. Is a few years later, he came in the lot. He was really drunk, smelled like urine. He'd obviously been peeing in his pants. It was pretty disgusting. And he's like, "I used to work here. Can you give me a discount on a tree?" Poor Reuben. I don't remember how we handled it, actually. I'm pretty sure I turned it over to Sam. once in a while, a tree, that was the worst. That was the only real crime that ever happened. Every once in a while, you'd see some needles in the back fence. Somebody would have thrown a tree over the back fence. And, you know, you lose one now and then. The other funny thing that happened for stealing a tree, I guess I have to tell this one, is I would always have my own tree right there next to my little countertop and my office, and actually a little pottery display as well, because I do make pottery. And I would have a tree there, and one day I was busy making a sale, and the customer said, "Hey, I think you're having a tree stolen." And I looked, and this guy is dragging a flocked Douglas fir with the ornaments, nothing too special, but anyway, and he's dragging it, he throws it into a pink Cadillac, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, we just had a tree stolen," and it was drug in the mud. It's awful. And the other time, the other tree I remember that I had my own tree is, we would go to the farm and prune the trees in the fall or whenever time of year. We would prune the trees and label them in the fall which ones we wanted the workers to cut to put on the truck. And there was one noble fir that was the weirdest shape ever. It was tall and skinny and had like no branches. And then it came down to the bottom and spread out nice and thickly on the bottom, totally not the cone-shaped Christmas tree. And bare and really, really weird shaped and very narrow. And I put about 16 ribbons on it saying Tara's tree, because I knew it would never make a real Christmas tree, but I thought it would be fun to have it. And so actually the guys who were cutting called to say, "There's this one tree, it says it's Tara's tree. Are you sure you want us to cut this thing?" So weird. And we did, and that was my tree that year. And somebody bought it from me. They wanted the funniest looking tree ever, and right at the end of the season, we went ahead and sold it. We had customers that would come back year after year. There were people that would come in with their children, and the children would run around playing tag in the tree lot, and they would say, "Yeah, when I was a little kid, I came to the Browns tree lot and ran around and played tag." And it was just generation after generation of people coming. At night, I would wear this little hat. I have my little Santa Claus hat on. One time, this little girl saw me in my hat, and she looked at me with these big eyes, and she said, "Are you Santa Claus?" And I said, "No, I'm not Santa Claus, but I'm Santa's helper, because I help people get their Christmas trees." And that really was what I did. It wasn't just, "Okay, great, get the tree." It was, people were going to marry this tree. I'm telling you, it had to be just perfect. There would be, sure, it's going to go in the corner. It could have two bad sides, but not for them. This is their mate for 3 weeks, and it's got to be just right. And so I would coach people to go around. Normally, the way it would work would be when a person did choose a tree. If it was a big tree, I would sing, "Tree out!" And one of the workers would come and help and carry a tree out and then help tie it on the car and make their tips and all that sort of stuff. Or if it wasn't too big, I would tilt it down and grab a hold of it myself, and the customer would pick up the stand and we would walk out to the gate. And I would always then kind of surreptitiously sniff my hands because they smelled like this wonderful conifer pitch, and my hands were always calloused and dirty and smelled fabulous. The last year we did it, we knew we were going to be gone and we were going to lose our lot to construction. We decided we would never move again. It was enough. I called the big city newspaper. We got a big article in the paper that said 40 years of the Browns selling Christmas trees in Long Beach. Sam's mother was there for the photo. It was a big spread. We just kept buying trees and selling trees. We figured we probably made about 7,000 extra bucks that year from that article in the newspaper, because we just kept working, and came home and paid off our house. And then the next year, we got to be home for the holidays, singing in the choir, being part of the community, and I love being home here for Christmas.
That was Tara Miller, and you're listening to the North Fork Storytellers Home for the Holidays. Stay tuned for another true story from Dana Stovern coming right up.
Christmas time is what you make of it. Yes, your Christmas time is what you make of it. Who's up there making all that noise? Is it Santa Claus with the Christmas toy? I hear reindeer hoofs up upon my roof, bringing lots of joy to all the girls and boys.
You're tuned into the North Fork Storytellers. Here's your host, Brian Calvert, to introduce our next storyteller.
This is Dana Stovern, and she emailed me telling me that she wanted to tell a story kind of out of the blue, and I'm really glad we did because she has a great story to tell. She lived here for 2.5 years. She lives here with her husband, Bob, who's going to be appearing in this story. And they're self-employed. They work from home. And Dana is a spiritual coach for spiritual entrepreneurs across the country. So I think we'll get a little taste of what that's like in this story. So let's just give her a round of applause. Dana, please come on up.
When I saw the call go out for the storytelling at being home for the holidays, the one that really came forward for me was the story that happened a year ago. So about a little over a year ago, my husband Bob came to me and said, "Dana, we've got to get a tree for Christmas." And the hair on the back of my neck stood on end because we've been together for almost 10 years and we've never gotten a Christmas tree. So this was an anomaly for us, and I didn't ask him why. I heard him say this to me, and I kind of nodded my head and kept going, and then he repeated it. Like, we go a few days, he'd say it again, "Dana, we need a tree for Christmas this year." "Okay, Bob." And this happened a number of times before I realized, you know, my husband keeps repeating this, so maybe I better pay attention. And the entire time we've been together, not having a tree, you know, through the course of conversation, we really had come to a place of, you know, we really don't need a tree because we don't want to participate in the annual Christmas tree slaughter. And we really love trees that are alive and out in the wilderness because we love to hike. And why would we want to kill a tree or purchase a tree that was killed just for the luxury of having it in our home for 2 weeks to a month? And it just didn't make sense to us. And me being a sensitive, when I see a tree being cut down, it hurts in my core. So we just didn't want to participate in this. But Bob kept repeating this, and I finally began to listen and realize something was calling to my husband deeper in his soul, and probably better pay attention. And right in the middle of all of this going on, the snow began to fall, and we love to snowshoe, so we did one of our first trips up on Grand Mesa to go snowshoe because we love to snowshoe up there. And on this particular trip, we were coming down from Grand Mesa, and we had pulled over on one of the pullouts, and as we were coming down, there was a family. We noticed there was a family in a truck, and there was a trailer behind the truck, and the family was in the truck, and the father was out by the side of the road, just on the edge of the woods, cutting down the family Christmas tree. And I was horrified because it was just by the side of the road, and the family hadn't even gotten out for the adventure of it. And he was finishing cutting down the Christmas tree, and he dragged this tree to the trailer and plopped it on the trailer,
drove away without lashing the tree down, and the tree just bloop, 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 rolled off the trailer into the road. I was horrified. And this is in the middle of my husband saying, "We need a tree for Christmas, Dana." So finally push came to shove, and just about when my husband was giving up on the whole Christmas tree idea, I said, "Okay, let's get a Christmas tree." It's getting kind of late in the season, and we're thinking maybe we're not going to be able to go up and cut a tree. And I said, "You know, let's just go down to City Market and buy a tree," which is the complete exact opposite of the people that we are. So it was really out of the ordinary for us to get in our truck, get our dog, get in the truck, drive down to Hotchkiss City Market, pull into the parking lot, and go to their little collection of trees. And we stood there and began sorting through the trees. And I watched my husband go through every single tree in that collection. And he chose a Washington fir from the very back. He had to go like four trees back. And he pulled this one out from the back, and he pulled it up to the front. And my husband, he's a little over 6 feet tall. He's a tall man. And this tree was about a foot taller than he was, somewhere between 7 and 8 feet tall. And he stood it in front of him. And I watched him bond with this tree. And he said, "This is our Christmas tree." I'm like, "I'm not going to argue with this man." So I clipped the tag and went in and I paid for the tree. And I came back out and he was loading the tree into our SUV. And Jasmine, our dog, was bouncing around wondering what this big green thing was coming into the cab with her. And I got into the truck with my husband and our dog, and our dog got onto my lap, and we closed the doors. And I realized that one of the beautiful parts of Christmas had escaped me for a very long time, because that tree filled pine scent in our entire truck and just effervesced all the way home. There is nothing like being in a vehicle filled with the real scent, not the real scent of a pine smell, not the thing hanging on your rear view mirror, but the actual real pine scent. And so we drove home. We drove up onto our mesa, we got home, we pulled in, and it dawned on me, we didn't have a tree stand. Mm-hmm. I'm like, "How the heck are we going to put this tree up if we don't have a tree stand?" And Bob's like, "Don't worry about that." And he went down into the basement and came back up. He fished out a tree stand that the previous homeowners had left that I didn't know was there, and it was perfect. Usually tree stands are weathered and worn and mangled and broken bits, and you can't quite get them to work, but this one was perfect. And Bob stood the tree up. He did the tree trimming, and he stood it up in the stand and got the tree perfect and watered the tree. And I went and got a blanket to put around its base, and he unclipped the binding from it, because all the branches on the tree were all clumped up, and he unclipped the binding and the branches fell open. And all of the activity had happened, and the tree was standing there, and we stood back, and we took in this tree standing in our living room. And this tree it seemed like it grew, and it felt like it filled the entire house. Even though it was just in the living room, it felt like it opened up and filled the entire house. And something jiggled in the center of me. And I began to notice that this tree was kind of doing its dance in our living room and communicating with the other pine trees in the yard and doing its dance with those pine trees in the yard, and there was this whole thing going on. And some memory in the back of my head started to crackle a little bit. And as Bob and I were standing there looking at this tree, this memory started unraveling. I turned around to my husband and I said to him, "When was the last time you decorated your own Christmas tree?" And he stood there and thought about it for a little while, and I stood there and thought about it in my own life, and I started backtracking. And the entire time Bob and I have been together, about 10 years, never had a tree together. And in the condo, we used to live in Durango, and when we had met, he was in a condo and I was in a condo. I never had a tree in my own place. And then I remembered back after I had been divorced and I was in my mid-30s and an independent woman around Colorado, and the apartments I had lived in were pretty small and I was busy and no tree. And during my ex-marriage, the space that my ex and I lived in was pretty tiny and no tree. And somewhere along the lines, I had collected, I had found a Walmart tree that was about a foot and a half tall that was pre-decorated that I could plug in. So that was my tree. But it kind of came and went, and I lost it somewhere along the way. And I backtracked to my late 20s, early teen years, when I would go home to my parents' home. And that was the last time I decorated a Christmas tree, over 25 years ago. And Bob did the same tracking back, and the same thing had happened for him. And I realized in that moment that I hadn't asked my husband why we needed a tree. And as we were standing there looking at that tree, we realized we needed a tree to anchor us in our own home and give us a sense of our own home, because everything in our lives had been so filled with movement and transiency, and this was our moment to have our tree anchored in our own home and celebrate being home for the holidays. So that evening, Bob, he got out white lights. We love white lights. And he strung the white lights on the tree, and even though it wasn't Christmas Eve, it kind of felt like Christmas Eve. And we went to bed that night feeling like it was Christmas Eve, and we slept, and we got up the next morning in our pajamas, and it felt like Christmas morning, even though it wasn't Christmas morning. And I went and got the ornament box. So I went and got the ornament box from the basement and brought it up. And I opened up this ornament box like it was Christmas morning, but it wasn't Christmas morning. And we started unwrapping ornaments. Now, you have to know that the movement that Bob and I have had in our lives didn't really give space for us to have a lot of Christmas boxes. So I had kept the ornaments pared down to one box. And I opened up this box and we began unwrapping these ornaments, and I pulled out my grandmother's 1977 angel from the Washington, D.C. cathedral that she gave me when I was a little girl. And I hung it on the Christmas tree. And I opened up these beautiful, like, snowflake globes that were huge from Hobby Lobby that I had purchased during my first marriage, hoping to put them on a tree in our own home, and that had never happened. And I finally had a tree to hang them on. And Bob unwrapped glass balls that his sister Teresa had made, filled them with sand from the Pacific Ocean where she lived in San Diego, and we hung those sand glass balls on the Christmas tree. And it went like this for a while. The Native American Indian ornament that my parents had given me went on the Christmas tree. The beautiful ornate Mexican ribbon balls that my other grandparents had given us when me and my other cousins were little, that went on the Christmas tree. A 2012 end of the Mayan calendar year turtle dove ornament went on the Christmas tree. And as we're hanging these up, Bob and I, we commented to one another, oh my God, this used to hang in the window at our old place, and this used to go on the shelf. None of these ornaments had ever gone on a tree, and they finally went on a tree. And so we got done decorating the tree that morning, and we stood back, and we realized for the first time, if ever, we finally had a place that we could call home, anchor in. And it was through this beautiful tree that had given its life to be with us for about a month in our living room and shake its booty with us.
That was Dana Stovern, and you've been tuned in to part two of the North Fork Storytellers, Home for the Holidays. To check out part one, which aired last week, go to kvnf.org. Both parts are posted there. Thank you for tuning in to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Stay tuned for As the Worm Turns coming up next. Happy holidays.
I'll be home for Christmas. half snow.